Hello, and welcome to Colors of the Dark. I'm your co-host, Rebecca McKendry, and with me, snarky as always, is Elric Kane. How you doing?
Snarky, just because I was mocking your ad reading?
Just because I can't get words out, you're all like, can just say it, Becca, just say it.
That's the most exciting part of our show, is us
It
recording
is.
ads and
The ads are always the best
reading them
part.
live.
We should just put in the raw of us doing ads sometimes as we mispronounce the most common words. And yeah, they're a trip.
Let me start the show by saying we might have been Rondo nominated, but we are now Pulitzer adjacent. Technically, Colors of the Dark hasn't won anything. But because Dan Kraus, who's been on our Patreon more than any other person, in fact, he might be the only person who's ever been on our Patreon.
We
Connor
call
Brad
him,
Henderson once, but he's the third
he's
chair.
Like our third chair,
He is third chair.
Almost co-host. So we are Pulitzer adjacent.
He just won the Pulitzer Prize for his book, Angel Down. I don't know if he's the first ever horror writer, but he certainly wouldn't surprise me if he's the first ever. Obviously, he writes much more than just horror. He writes a little bit. But unbelievable when it's somebody that you genuinely, I never thought I'd actually know somebody who would have pulled it to, but when
no,
it's, I will, okay, I don't usually reveal things like this, but the text message when I wrote to him, he said, "I'm probably the only person to win a Pulitzer who's seen both Necromantic films." And I thought that was about the funniest response I've ever seen. So I had to at least throw it out there.
It's
so well
totally
done,
true.
But that's
no,
a humble
that was
brag. Well done, Dan.
That was honestly, when he put up Pulitzer Prize winner on, it popped up on Instagram feed today, I almost thought that it was like a joke. And then I realized that it was on the book. And it totally makes sense. Angel Down by far was like one of the best novels, like hands down from last year. And I put it in my top 10. And so it totally makes sense and well deserved. I mean, if you guys have not read Angel Down, that novel is fucking like brain shifting. That was intense, an intense read. So,
and he has a new, has a new sci-fi. You were speaking about sci-fi at the top. He has a new sci-fi one, which I don't, I haven't read yet.
Nyx, or I'm probably saying it incorrectly, but yes, six Nyx, something like that. But yeah, I've got that one on my to-read shelf and I can't wait to jump in. He's got so much. Like,
well,
I,
he's done a lot this year. Partially Devoured was my favorite thing I read at the start of this year. So
he has Whalefall coming out. And I mean, it's just like amazing, amazing
this
stuff.
Is, so. He paid for this ad spot. And he's going to pay by having to appear on Deep Cuts with his Pulitzer.
With his
I wonder
Pulitzer.
What you actually get from winning. I wonder if they give, I think there's a small cash prize, but I wonder if there's like a nice trophy or something.
I would want something like Oscar worthy to hang on my wall or place on a shelf that I can be like, and this is my Pulitzer for the horror novel I wrote. Holy shit.
I feel like that and the Nobel Peace Prize are pretty close to me. I don't know why.
I always wanted a Cable Ace Award because it looked like something you could kill somebody with. It looked like a sculpture you would see in a Giallo movie because it was like this really pointy ace sculpture.
I think your reasoning for success is
you know, when I worked eons ago at Fangoria, one of our employees there had won a Cable Ace Award, and I used to look at that thing on his death and a desk death. There we go. See where my brain
when
goes?
He died, you look
when
at
he
it.
Died, I was like looking at that thinking, did somebody kill him with it? No, but it looked like a weapon, and I was very formidable. So
so well, congrats to him. Yes, congrats to Dan. Sad news, really quickly, just before I got on here, I was actually really shocked to find this out. One of the best emerging artists, I think, in the whole movie game and movie poster game, his name's Tony Stella, Studio Stella. You will have 100% seen. He does basically the watercolor reinterpretations of a lot of 70s classic films. He unexpectedly passed away last night, and no one saw it coming. No one knew anything. So just heard that from friends and just was looking at all his art. And I've loved his – he has my favorite Vertigo picture I've ever seen. Just he just does such good work. He's been – they've been using his stuff a lot on new Blu-ray releases and stuff like that. But a really talented artist, and always such a bummer when something like that happens.
So, I'll also say Jonathan Tiersten passed away yesterday.
Of course, yeah.
Who many of us remember from Sleepaway Camp and a lot of just other amazing stuff, but I'll remember him as one of the nicest people I ever hung out with at horror conventions. He was just always such wonderful charisma to hang around, and I loved when I got put at a booth near him because he was just going to make it a fun, positive weekend no matter what. So yeah, he will be missed.
Yeah, but turn our attention to movies.
The horror lives on.
The
Let's
horror does live
do
on.
It. And
so many. I saw a few things.
I saw a lot. And I'm going to kick us off with some TV because there's one that.
TV above movies?
No, I'm doing it because honestly, that was like, I watched two things this week that I was like, fuck yes, I'm so glad this is back. And this is in addition to From, which is back now and like reigning supreme. And The Terror is coming back for a third season starting next week.
That's
I don't know
right.
how to fit all this shit in.
Dan Stevens. And I don't even know if it's horror. Like, who knows what this one's about? Have you seen this one? No.
It looked silver,
Mental
something silk.
Institute
It's
kind of
set in a
thing.
mental institution. So I'm going
Very
to
curious.
assume it's going to go hard because the last two did. But yeah, so I don't know as much about this one, but I'm going to freaking watch it.
Oh,
Okay, I'm
yeah.
kicking it off with the greatest thing that let me just say, I had seen the marketing for this. It like had popped up on my, hey, this is now available on Apple TV. And I had not even considered it until Elric texted me and was
Oh,
like,
I
oh
never
my
even.
God. You have to watch Widow's Bay.
Well, shout out to my friend Dick, who likes watched it. Now, before he watched, he made me watch a trailer a couple weeks ago, and I was like, whoa, that looks great. But I was worried it'd be too much of a broad comedy. And then he watched the first two and said this is the best thing he's ever. And I was like, oh yeah, let me see about that. And then I was just like, this is like that perfect tone, which is almost impossible. I feel like so many people either make a comedy with a horror element or they make a horror film where you get a couple laughs. But this is that place right in between, the magical place where people say where the tone can be light and kind of funny and affectionate and
But
intimate,
still have scary
but
stuff.
still be creepy as fuck. It's awesome. This is my favorite thing this week too.
Yeah. So that's why I wanted to kick off with this because I watched a lot of really good stuff this week. But this one, I watched both of the episodes that they released back to back and then was actually pissed that there was not a third.
Yeah,
And it
me
was
too.
like 1 a.m. on a Sunday night and I had like to get to bed, but I was still like, oh my God, I need a third. Like I would binge the whole thing. So it is about a New England island, like a real small New England island that is completely undiscovered by tourists. And the reason is because all of the residents there are so superstitious. The island has this crazy history of all of these different horror things, from witch trials to serial killers to this fog that supposedly turns everybody into zombies. Just these superstition after legend. Some of the people who were born on the island believe that they can never leave it or they'll die immediately. And so it is just this incredibly quirky, superstitious community. And this mayor who was brought to the island on vacation but was not born there has now taken control and decide that he wants to turn this island into the next like Bar Harbor or Martha's Vineyard. So he's invited a New York Times writer out to do a piece on the island and he's trying to turn it over for tourists. But everybody who lives there is very convinced that everybody's going to die, that because of all of these different superstitions and hauntings that they all firmly believe in, that he is just bringing people to the island to die. Now, the humor comes out in the ensemble cast. It is all about these crazy, wild, quirky people who live there. And I'm just going to get this has two of my absolute favorite actors in it. Stephen Root plays a crazy fisherman who believes that the fog is coming for everybody and is trying to ring this like fog alarm bell that they've had there since the 1800s and is
Well, I get
just.
the feeling he was, I don't think they say it, but I get the feeling he was the prior mayor. I think he ran the town before, but now he's not.
You get
And
that
that's,
feeling.
yeah, they
Yeah.
haven't said it, but he's great. He's really
And
good.
then my I wanted to cast her in a couple of things so far. Elric knows I keep putting her on casting list. Dale Dickey,
Yeah, she's great.
I love so much. And she plays the secretary of the mayor, and she is just like the town gossip.
Yeah.
And I love her so much in this. Everybody's gonna know her from like Winterbone, but like she is just so amazing in this. So yeah, it's just amazing cast. This is hilariously, but it's got some really scary moments. Like it's
And I think
definitely
it's by the person who created Parks and Rec,
Parks and Rec and
Amy
has
Sippel.
written on a bunch of other comedy shows. This is kind of their first horror swing.
Well, it's just the tone, and like, and if that those characters sound really crazy, and while it's not like the tone of Matthew Reese has become kind of one of my favorite actors just this year, because I never watched The Americans, which is why he's famous, that
He's
show.
great in The
So I never
Americans.
watched that. But then this earlier this year, there was that movie with Claire Danes where he's the or the TV show on Netflix or whatever, where it's like real over the top, but he's like the psycho real estate mogul, and she's the writer, and he's so good in that. And then this is the 180 degree different character. I love his character in this because he's kind of a scaredy cat, but also trying to prove his point. And I'm very curious where it goes. I wish there was two episodes a week instead of one. I'm a little bummed that this week, because they're short, they're like 25 minutes. So, but yeah, top of the list, Widow's Bay, definitely one of the better
Widow's Bay on
shows of the year.
Apple. This was just an absolute gem. And I'm going to go ahead and mention the other TV show that I was so excited to discover is back, Deadlock. And I know you didn't watch this one.
Don't know what it is.
This, no, you do know this because I
I do.
watched the first season last year and absolutely loved it. It's a Tasmanian Australian like murder mystery comedy about two very, very different detectives who the first season they're solving crimes in a really, really small Tasmanian town. It's two women. And now they have relocated this second season to Darwin, Australia, which I had to spend the entire episode Googling. It's where
Very
saltwater
isolated.
cracks are known. It's very isolated. And it's about it's again about murders taking place, but it's within two warring crocodile tour families. And it's just so quirky. It's exactly kind of the same thing that makes Widow's Bay work, where it's this beautiful combination of like a really, really captivating murder mystery with just these eccentric, hilarious characters. So I was just thrilled to see that Deadlock season two has released, and I'm like three episodes in and enjoying it.
All right, sounds
Okay.
good.
So
Movies.
let's get into
Let's
some movies here.
start with the biggie, the big release, killing it at the box office. Hokum,
Hokum.
Damien McCarthy. We didn't see this one together. For me, this is exactly what I want from a horror movie. I don't think I could imagine a more me horror movie that where I was just sitting there going, "Oh my God!" It's like it felt so close to a Ghost Story for Christmas. It felt like the best possible version of one of those. It was like whistle and I'll come running mixed, because what's so good about it is it makes Adam Scott a total fucking prick, and that's what those show movies always did. Those they're always the writer has to be an asshole,
Or the
the
professor or
professor, or he
whoever.
has to be smug and above people. And there is a scene with a spoon, which is one of the best. I was just like, oh my God, you're the biggest asshole I've ever seen on screen. And yet you can still win you over by the end of the movie through some of the actions and the story of the movie. I just, because I've liked all his movies so far. I think they're all good, but I just think this is like the full meal. Like I feel both of them, like Oddity was so close and had some really creepy parts. But man, this movie just, it's a writer. Weirdly enough, IMDb calls him a horror writer, and I didn't really view him as a horror
No,
writer.
I didn't get him as
No.
horror. I got him as kind of action adventure because he's
Yeah.
writing those. I mean, I saw him more as like a Cormac McCarthy,
There's something, yeah. It's
because he's
like
writing
the
like this conquistador, like hyperviolent conquistador stuff. Like I saw it very much as like he's writing The Road or he's writing Blood Meridian. Like it's
And
these
it
like
throws you a bit
violent.
at the start because the opening scene is not what you're expecting if you've seen trailers. You're like, wait, what? Am I watching a Moroccan adventure or something? And then you realize, he's a writer. But it's basically this writer who travels to Ireland because his parents had their honeymoon there to this very specific inn, and he has decided he's going to bury their ashes there. He obviously has very the scene where he's pouring out ashes, and it's like with the mom's ashes, it's like with delicacy, and then his dad's, he just pours them out,
He
like,
just throws
and
them,
it's kind of great because it just tells you, oh, that's like all the backstory you need for that character. And he comes there, and he seems to be very miserable. I'm not going to say too much what happens here because this one is in theaters right now, and everyone who listens to this should be watching it. But he goes out there, and he is not in a good place. And slowly he gets sucked into a couple different mysteries. There's a couple different threads, a missing person mystery, a haunted hotel. There, the what setup we can tell you is that there is a in the honeymoon suite of this Airbnb bed breakfast, whatever you want to call it.
It's an inn.
Yeah, it's an inn, Irish inn. They have welded it shut because the owner believes they have trapped a witch in there. And doesn't let anyone rent it or go up there. So that's part of the overhanging kind of creep factor. And then we get all these other threads that take us through. But some of the stuff when he's alone, it's just so good. It's just like, I love those kind of horror. And we just don't get many effective ones like that because usually it's about teenagers or something younger, you know? It's, I just, I was in heaven. I was like, all right, I just wish I could get more movies like that in the world. But I'm so happy we have this one. And Adam Scott's really coming out. He's really good in these kind of things. I really like.
Yeah, he was surprising. And I mean, I still love Adam Scott with his little ponytail from Hellraiser 4.
Yeah. Did you see the
So, yeah.
story this week? I don't know if this is an old story, new story, but it made me die laughing. Did you know that he audition for, because he was a struggling actor, he auditioned for Hellraiser 6, even though he's in Hellraiser 4.
I did see
And he
that.
was like, maybe they won't notice. They won't remember that I was in 4. I'm like, that's great. Like,
No, I read that
yeah.
article. That is
If that's a
amazing.
true story, then props to him. But
But yeah, like he definitely does something different in this. And I would have never pegged him as, you know, who I want to play, the drunk, awful writer who just is terribly mean and abusive to everybody. Let's get Adam Scott in, because I always view him as like the nicest guy in the world from Parks and Rec. And but he really does something different in this. I love that it brings back, well, witch horror for starters, but it's got a lot more to it. But I do have to say, I kind of liked the horror in Oddity a little bit better, because I wasn't expecting it. Like, I didn't know where it was going. With this, they kind of tell you the story up at the top. But that said,
They do, but I didn't know where it was
it goes a lot of
going.
different places. There's a lot of different
Yeah, we're
mysteries
in an
involved.
underground space. Then I
Yeah.
started going, whoa, this is unexpected.
Yeah.
I think I just like that, and this is like a touch more mainstream than the other two in that sense, but in a positive way, in a way where it's like, and I think one of the differences, and look, I might be wrong, the next thing we might see his name attached to is he's doing the new Poltergeist remake. But I
It's going to
really
be like
hope, but
that.
I hope he doesn't, because I think this is how the great, and this is why, that's why Jordan Peele is such an effective name, is because there's some of these people, if they can get a chance to make one movie, then the next one's a little better, the next one's a lot better. Like, he is really growing between each film, and it's exciting to see. But
No,
we'll
if
see.
he's not doing another Evil Dead movie within a couple of years, I would be shocked, or
Well, I'd be
something of
shocked, but I
that
hope
ilk.
not. I don't
Yeah.
think that's the best way. I think that IP suck. Unfortunately, it doesn't necessarily work for all of them, it's just the
Yeah.
norm,
Okay. Well, I am going to take us to one that I saw that I absolutely loved. One that I didn't know much about, so much so that I wasn't going in expecting to love it as much as I did. Over Your Dead Body. This is IFC movie, has been playing in theaters for about 2 weeks now. And all I knew is that it was about a married couple who goes to a secluded cabin together, with the each having the intent of killing the other one. And it's Samara Weaving and Jason Segel. And they basically explain that in the trailer, that they're going to this cabin under the guise of, we're going to try to repair our relationship this weekend and really connect as a couple. But each of them is planning on killing the other one. And so that's all I knew going in. And I will say, that is like the first little tiny sliver of the movie. It's hilarious, but so much more happens. It's twist after twist after twist. And the way that it is brought out, the way that it is structured, just the basic kind of timeline of the movie is so funny, because it bounces around where you'll be watching a scene and then suddenly it'll say 2 weeks earlier, and then it will explain something, and then it will say back, bounce back. And so it's just so clever in the way that it's doing this. Oh my God. Strummer, stop and get out now. No, you may not. Close the door now. Close the door. Hey, I'm going to take
People are
that back.
listening
Hey,
now.
Ernie, let's pause that and let's mark that as an edit. Sorry, I hope the Lakers weren't scoring then. Okay. But the way that the actual just layout of the movie is set up, how it's bouncing around timeline-wise, makes it so much funnier. This is also an ensemble cast doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Samara Weaving, dare I say, I liked her better in this than Ready or Not Two. She's amazing in this. Jason Segel is great. But then it's also got Timothy Oliphant and Juliette Lewis. And they really up it. Like, it just gets so hilarious once they come in. Jermay Taccone is Taccone, I'm dreadfully slaughtering that name, is the director. He's an SNL writer and director. He does a lot of stuff with Lonely Island, so he does a ton of comedy. And then these are the writers from Dead Snow, The Trip, and Thrash, Thrall, yeah, Thrash, the new shark one. And so, yeah, it makes sense, because it's the Dead Snow people. I was immediately like, oh, okay, I see it. But it was just way more clever than I was expecting it to be. This was really, really fun. Over Your Dead Body just left theaters, I believe, this last week, but I assume it's going to hit VOD soon, IFC release.
That was a really good trailer to that one. I definitely want to see that. And I think Samara Weaving is probably one of the best comedic actors right now. So,
She's so funny in this, and she's using her regular Australian accent, which is a huge sticking point because he's like, everything you say sounds shitty in that accent, and then
Oh,
she's like overdoing. It's such a fun
that's
moment.
funny. One I saw, so we talked about Thrash, not trash. We talked about Thrash
Thrash.
last episode and this episode. Like, if it's Friday night and like I don't know what to watch, my favorite thing in the world is when there's a new Netflix horror movie. Like, even if people are slagging on it or whatever, it's just there's something about that that can be, even if it's not going to be my favorite movie, it's not going to be hokum for me, but it's something new and shiny. And I do like that here and there, especially on Friday night. So, Apex is the new film starring Charlize Theron, Eric Bana at the start. It is by the director Baltasar Kormákur, who made that movie Beast, the Lion Attack movie with Idris Elba about a year or two
That
ago.
was fun.
And he's
I
made a
liked
lot of
that
big
one.
movies, like with big stunts and stuff and big, like, kind of. So the opening of this movie is where you see all the, a lot of money spent. It's basically Charlize and Eric Bana. Eric Bana is the slightly more seasoned, but they're both thrill seeking rock climbers in the middle of, on some massive Everest like mountain doing shit that actually makes my stomach turn watching it. Even like there's moments where you're standing over a cliff where I can actually, I wasn't scared of heights when I was younger, but the older I get, the more I can just feel it in shots like that. Anyway, they're doing crazy stuff, and it's a thing where you're connected to the other person, so it's not just rock climbing, but you are physically relying on the other person, and they're doing some crazy stuff. He's done it all around the world. There's no way to not talk about this with spoilers, unfortunately, because that this is the setup of the movie. So stop listening if you don't want to know anything. They're doing this thing. She wants to keep going up this mountain. He's worried there's a storm coming. She's trying to push herself but can't quite make it. And then a storm hits, and suddenly these massive kind of snowy rocks come down, and Eric Bana gets his ass fucking, well, maybe killed, maybe not, but he gets hit in the head, and he's hanging as dead weight. And basically, if she doesn't cut him free, she's dead. And so she's this is the and this is the cold open. This is just the first like 10 minutes. So she has to make a choice. Cut to Australia, hot desert, a few years later, a couple years later, because he was Australian, I think they, as he really is, I think they, so maybe she was going back for that reason. And she's now got a canoe, a kayak, and she's going to go not do mountain climbing now, because she's obviously a thrill seeker, but now she's also a morning one. She has gone there by herself and wants to be alone to just go on this kind of solitude adventure in the middle of nowhere outback, kind of back to your Darwin type area. And she runs across a bunch of hicks in a convenience store and is getting kind of unwanted attention. But Taron Egerton, who's one of my favorite young actors out there, he kind of sticks up for her and kind of tells them to FO, and they seem to listen to him. But when he's the other big name actor in the cast, I'm sitting there watching this movie go, well, he's the only other famous person in this. What is this movie going to be about? She gets out to the forest, does her little, kayak day where she's like feeling all alone. And then she gets back to the campsite and all her stuff's gone. And she's like, what the fuck? She goes down river a bit and sees his river, and oh, he was nice to me. But she plays it really well. She's very defensive. She is a woman who knows what it means to be a woman alone, even a woman with skills like she has, which like to be on guard. And it's a very, I think she's really good in this movie. She has reason. It's one of the fucking craziest. I was not expect. I thought this movie was gonna be a she has to survive the wilderness movie.
That's what I thought it was. I didn't watch
Yes,
it because I was kind of like,
times that by the fucking crazy that it goes. The last act of this movie does two things where I was like, I cannot believe this is happening in a Netflix movie. It's so weird. Like, why he's doing the things he's doing is so bizarre. And even there's a physical thing they do to him at one point where I was like, that's really gross and crazy. It's so much more fun because of that to me, like, because it stops being just what I thought. I'm not going to, no, it is good. I think it's well made and everything. It's just, it has a crazy ending where you're like, I don't know about this. But it's still exciting the whole time and really well made. But it is definitely worth watching to see people, because Taron Egerton's Mr. Clean Cut, good looking, probably up for James Bond even. So he's not the type to play this. But when he turns, it's pretty crazy, because he's just I won't tell you his backstory, but he's kind of just like, he kind of has picked her because he sees how skilled she is, and he's like, oh, this will be fun, like, you're a good target. And then it's crazy. So I actually think you would quite enjoy it. I think you'll think it's a good movie in that sense. I won't say any more, but it's just a couple things where I was like, oh, that's a choice, like, which you don't expect in a Netflix movie like this. Whereas Thrash, you're watching it, you're like, crazy stuff's gonna happen, of course. in this one, I saw the teaser. I was just like, oh, okay, this is just her surviving the elements, and maybe there's a guy, coming. But this is very much a stalker type of movie in the desert. So I do recommend it.
Ooh.
I actually liked it. I thought it was fun.
Okay. I had kind of disregarded this one, and
Yeah.
I will, they have a great advertising campaign. Like they
Yeah.
have papered Burbank, with these amazing billboards, but I thought it was just like survival horror. And I was kind of like, eh, I'll get there when I get there.
I always
I
wonder,
find
why does
it
Netflix do that? Because
great.
it's on your server that everyone already has. I always am curious, like, why they spend a lot of money on marketing sometimes. I'm like, huh, that's interesting.
And the
Why
ones that
bother?
they market, there are certain things that just appear on Netflix that I'm like, I have heard nothing
Oh, yeah,
about
no,
this.
yeah.
And then there's other things that they dump so much on the marketing campaigns for that I'm kind of like, well, I wonder why you didn't spend anything on that one
Actually, I'm going to
instead.
answer my own question then. I think the reason then, actually, because that's a good point, so many just pop up. It's probably built into the contract of the actors.
Oh,
It's
that's a
probably the
good
talent.
call.
Like Charlize will not do streaming unless you're going to deliver on the marketing side. And that would make a lot of
Or
sense.
it's part on the
Part of the
sales side of like,
sales
we will
producing
not sell you
actor, yeah.
the film unless you set aside a specific
Yeah.
allotment for P&A. I
Yeah,
think,
no,
yeah,
I'm sure it's a
those
mixture of
track.
those things, which is a good thing. I think that is positive because you want movies to have presence. It is depressing when you discover something really good. And so far, I'd say all the best things I've ever seen on Netflix were the ones that no one had heard a peep about. They just popped up one day and you're like, wait, what? How is no
That
one talking
one
about this?
called Your Monster that I watched like a
No.
couple of weeks ago, that was just kind of like a Netflix discovery. I was like, what the hell? No, there have been so many of those where it's just like, I just find it on Netflix and I'm like, how is nobody talking about this?
It's always interesting. But Apex, put it down as another notch on the Australian tourism belt. I swear to God, no country is so different than the country. Like when I go to Australia, I do not feel this way. But when I watch the movies, I'm like, wow, you guys really don't want people to ever come to Australia. You want people to be terrified of everything that will kill you in this country. From Wake and Fright to Wolf Creek, there is a lot of reasons. But Australia's
I'm just
beautiful.
watching that TV show Deadlock, and it's nothing but kind of backwoodsy folk trying to
Yeah.
kill each other and gators that jump out of the water for chicken. So or crocodiles, they're crocodiles, sorry.
They
So
make a great flat white in Australia, so don't let them tell you otherwise. Great
flat
coffee.
whites, flat whites. I have almost shot on the Gold Coast so many times that I want to. I really, really
Yeah,
want to.
there's a
It looks
pretty big
beautiful.
studio down there, yeah.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous. Okay, so the next one was a catch-up title for me because this had been in theaters, and the week that it was in theaters, I ended up going to see something else, and I can't remember what it was. And then I was kind of like, I'll get to this when I get to this. And I finally got to it, and I really, really, really enjoyed this, surprisingly, because I was not actually planning to. And this is called They Are Going to Kill You. Did you by chance check this one out?
I caught this as well because our friend Dick getting a lot of love to he loved it. He loved the
Yeah.
tone. So I was like, okay, I'll watch this on thingy. I didn't love it, but it was almost too stylized for
It's
me to
very
care.
stylized. The guy
It's
gives
kind of hard to explain. Yeah, because I liked
yeah.
his other movie. He made a film. This director, Kirill Sokolov, made the film I talked about a couple years ago called Why Don't You Just Die? And it was like,
Oh, it was
yeah, it's
fantastic.
really well
Yeah.
made, and I think this is well made. When I say this, it's too stylish, I don't mean it's not well made. It's very slick and fun. It just like the stakes become more like a superhero movie than a horror film for me
And
at a
I would
point.
compare it to like a old school Tarantino level of
Yeah,
violence
definitely a
if
lot of.
Tarantino leaned heavy into digital capabilities.
Yeah.
And the director clearly gives no fucks if something absolutely ridiculous, like somebody running up a wall and then macheteing somebody from above, looks super digital. He's just like, let's still do it. And so there are these moments where the violence is so over the top and fun, but it does have this weird style to it.
Yeah.
And how reliant it is on these like violent action sequences. That said, I still really enjoyed this. I think I'm with Dick. Like, this was a really fun one for me. It is about a woman who is looking for her sister who has disappeared. And the last place that she knew her sister was that her sister had taken a job as a housekeeper at this like super high-end New York City apartment building, condo building. And so she steals an identity and takes a job as a housekeeper in the same building to try to find her sister. And this is all revealed in the trailer. And when she gets there, she finds that this building has a huge history of weird disappearances because they're Satanists and they tend to sacrifice the staff to Satan. And that's all revealed in the trailer. And then you find out that she is going to fight her way back out and to find her sister. She has been to prison. So you realize that she has got some scrappy fucking fighting skills and that it is going to turn into some wild action film as she fights her way through Satanists in this high rise. And there's more to it than that. There's a lot of supernatural elements that play into it. This is not like the first Ready or Not, where they leave you questioning if the curse or the satanic rituals or their belief in magic is real. They let you know from the beginning that yes, these people have some type of magical ability that is going to make it impossible for this woman to beat them, but she's still going to try. And so there is never a question if there is some type of satanic supernatural thing that has infected this building. That said, absolutely wild action sequences, some of the best kill sequences I've seen in a really long time. The two that Zazie Beetz plays, the woman who is
She's really
fighting her
good,
way out,
yeah.
she's great in it. Heather Graham and Patricia Arquette were like amazing. I loved Heather Graham in this so
Yeah,
much.
those two are fun to see. No, everyone's good, and it does something in the last act that I started to enjoy more because it's so weird. Like the last act, when it kind of gets to the reveal, big bad kind of stuff, it's funny, it's weird, and that's where I was like, okay, no, it's winning me over. I definitely enjoyed watching it. It just wasn't. There was something about the stuff that I at times because it's so non-real and all the deaths, I start to not feel much. But I probably would have enjoyed more on a big screen, with a crowd. This one, but anyway, yes, again, 1% horror,
1%
big
horror. It's
time. There
definitely
definitely,
that.
yep,
Oh,
it's more
yeah.
of that. Well, I got one kind of connected to that we also saw the trailer for at the same time called Forbidden Fruits, directed by Meredith Alloway. I will just say, not all movies can be for all people, and I want to be polite about it because I do believe I'm watching this movie going, I don't, this is not for me. Like this just isn't, I just am not connecting to this movie at all. And I love some Diablo Cody, and this Diablo Cody is a producer on this, and it's definitely written with that vernacular. But I just could not access this movie at all, even though I really like the cast, Lily Reinhart, Victoria Pedretti. But as I'm watching that, I and this isn't, when we joke about Microwave Massacre, every movie being someone's favorite. Well, that's a joke, and somebody does like Microwave. But I knew watching this, I could tell that all the things I was not. I'm just out of too old, too male, too whatever it was. As I'm watching, I'm like, somebody, there is going to be a real demographic who are going to really take to the. It's going to be a cult, slumber party type of movie. But for me, I was just kind of, it has some interesting stuff and interesting. It's all set in a mall, which is always interesting, especially for something that's a little more indie. It felt lower budget than maybe the trailer made it. I thought for some reason this was a big studio thing, but as I was watching it, I was like, oh, clearly it isn't. It's obviously so, hats off to them. And it definitely is going for a certain style, in vernacular, kind of like a Clueless almost. Clueless meets the Craft kind of thing. But in a mall store, a group of three girls who all have different fruits as their names, apple, cherry, and fig. They meet this new girl who works there, and they kind of adopt her to indoctrinate her into their kind of witch coven. And her name's Pumpkin, and
You
she,
just said Coven.
yeah, coven, oven. And she's trying to pretty similar storyline to the other story you were just talking about. There is some reason she's working there very much like what you're just talking about. It doesn't have. I think my issue with it was that if maybe if it's a hangout movie, if you like these characters, you'll like it as a hangout movie. But it doesn't have an engine, so like they're just kind of talking and doing things, but it never feels like the. But we have to get to the because the something's happening. It doesn't have that, and maybe in the last 10 minutes, it kind of has that. So for me, I was just kind of kept at arm's length the whole time. But I'm definitely smart enough to realize that it will have its people, so I didn't feel too bad about it.
Yeah, I will say I literally just this afternoon had a meeting with one of my female horror grad students who was describing this as her favorite film of the year.
Yep.
So it's
Fascinating, yeah.
definitely gonna have kind of its audience that
Well,
it will
Marnie, I was
find.
thinking of more like I was imagining Marnie and friends watching this and thinking maybe they'll really take to the way the girls talk and dress and, because it's more about that style than it is what the movie's about.
I bet they will. This is one I actually debated taking her to this in the theater,
Yeah,
so
it would
much
have been
so that
fine.
I text Bria and Brian Collins because I knew that they had seen it before and asked, like, does this have anything sexual in it? And they mentioned something about a
There's
blowjob scene, and I was kind of like, that's like
yeah,
something at
there's a
home.
montage. There's a montage with one of the characters, Victoria Pedretti, great actor. Doing having sex with lots of guys, but it's all. Other than that, it's pretty much. I still think you could probably watch it because it's all it goes by pretty fast, that part. But good actors, and so we'll
Nice.
see.
Okay. I only have a graphic novel left. Do you
I
have
got
anything
one
else?
more movie that we should
Yeah.
mention because I won't ruin much because it's a twisty turny one. J.P. Alett produced Affection
Oh,
coming out.
yeah.
It will be out by the time this episode comes out. This is the darker Happy Death Day loop version for Jessica Rothy, the actor from the Happy Death Day film. So it's like it's got some similarities to those movies, but it's the very serious, very grounded sci-fi Cronenberg-y time crimes would be the connections.
Ooh.
It is a we see a woman die at the start, her played by her, very confused. Something happens, she dies, she wakes up in bed with her husband, and then she's like, I don't know who you are, stay the fuck away from me. She has a total freak out. Then this little girl comes out and goes, Mommy, why are you acting this way? And she's having a total panic attack, and she's like, I don't know who you are. He holds up a mirror, she's like, I don't know who that is. That is not me. What the fuck are you doing? And he tells her she's got this memory disorder and that they're living in an isolated place to try to reset her, to kind of help her, and that this has happened before, that she's gotten upset. And that is only the tip of the iceberg of the truth. There is a much more sci-fi, I would call it more sci-fi than horror, much more of a sci-fi thing going on in this storyline and movie. And there's lots of loops and lots of kind of body horror death. And it's really interesting. It's got some really, a couple really cool moments. I was like, oh, okay, this is a, I'm curious. I don't know if it's going theatrical or VOD. I wasn't sure, but it's the kind of movie I think it would be nice to be able to see on the big screen. B.T. Mazza is the director. But yeah, it's fun to see Jessica Roth also giving a much more grounded, serious version of a similar type of idea performance, showing some range. But this is called Affection, and it is basically out now. Definitely more my bag than a couple of the others.
Okay, my graphic novel for this week is Orla. This just came out from Mad Cave, just released April 21st, so just a couple of weeks ago. And this is by John Lees, who had previously written one of my favorite graphic novels from last year, The Nasties. And the illustrator on this is Sally Cantorino. Sorry about that, Sally. This was so much fun. I had picked this up because I just love John Lees, and I will read anything he does after The Nasties. That's the one that I had discussed last year about the kid in the UK who's obsessed with the video
No,
nasty films,
it's called
but
The Nasty. My script's
yeah,
called The Nasty.
thank you. The Nasty, the nasty, singular. But it is the kid who's obsessed with video nasty films, but also has this kind of slasher imaginary friend that follows him around, that he talks to, that rights his wrongs for him. And there's just a lot of kind of really good, like, horror kid stuff in there from The Nasty. Thank you. But this is his new one, vastly different. Like, it still has that same sharp humor that we had in The Nasty, but it's a vastly different plot and tone. It is a rom-com horror feature graphic novel about a she's an art restorationist by day. She enjoys romantic novels. She loves watching birds. She's always just kind of been by herself. And you find out that it's because her name's Orla, and you find out that she tends to be by herself because anytime she's infected with this thing that she calls the ick. She refers to it as her ick. And anytime she is stressed, angry, afraid, turned on, and kind of freaked out sexually, this monstrous thing inside her kind of bursts forth and kills whatever is causing her stress. And what she finds is it means that she can't have a romantic partner, because anytime that she's about to have sex with them or anything like that, that she gets even remotely stressed out or feels awkward, this thing will burst out and try to eliminate the problem, which is always her sexual partner. And so she has been using this to rid the world of shitty guys. So she's literally like going through Tinder, trying to find the absolute worst humans in the world so she can go have sex with them and kill them in the process. And then this monstrous thing eats them, and then she has to clean it up. But she eventually falls in love with the guy who runs the bookstore, and then has to kind of figure out how to negotiate the monster and still have a relationship with this guy. And it's so good. This was like exactly what I needed, because I started reading this right after watching Hokum or watching, and it was so scary. And then I came home and just jumped into this thing that really does function like a romantic comedy horror. The death scenes are still fucking brutal. Like, it is still so brutal when the monster comes out and like rips people's intestines out. It's still, it just goes for it on the
Sounds
horror
Headland
edge.
Lottery.
Yeah, it is. It's real Hennen Lottery. You are very, very right there. I was thinking even kind of Stuart Gordon-esque, because it does have this kind of that level of humor that we see in Reanimator to it. But yeah, Hennen Lottery is another really, really, really good comp, where it is this just sweet romantic story about this haphazard, woman who is just trying to get by but has this thing, and it's fun. So yes, kudos, John Lees. This was a trip. So this is Orla, and it is available everywhere graphic novels are sold now.
Okay, moving on to our horror fact. Did you
Horror
know?
history,
Horror
did you
whatever.
know? Yeah.
Did you know? We need like show tune things where it's
We
like,
do.
did you know? I'm going to do mine quickly because it's quicker. Because it connects to. So Hokum, after Hokum, I was like, huh. And I was in Ireland last summer. I was like, I know one of the thing about Ireland, Scotland, is especially how they're kind of just so known for their history of the supernatural and the haunted. And one of the ideas of the thin places, in Ireland being one of the places most people say has the whatever we consider the thin place, which is this idea of the thin layer between our reality and a supernatural order or different cosmos in a sense, and that there's these places like what's the most famous one with the from the Halloween 3 where the masks are made.
That would be
Stonehenge
Stonehenge.
being one of them. Yes, thank you. I didn't make it out last time, not in Ireland, but anyway, so then I was like, huh, what is the most haunted place in Ireland? And so I typed it in and I got some learned about a castle, but also a really creepy thing that kind of I was like, damn, that's creepy. So Leap Castle in County Offaly, Ireland, is renowned as one of the most haunted locations. It had a the idea is that Druids founded it. They lived there for a long time and did all sorts of shenanigans. At some point, this real asshole family, very wealthy family moves in, and at one point in the chapel, a pri one of the brothers is a priest. His brother murders. They get into a fight. The brother murders him, and he bleeds out on the pulpit of this place. This is just one of the elements. So there's a lot of reasons why it's kind of haunted. But here's where it gets creepy. It's famous for something called the Elemental, and I'd never heard of this. And this is it's really eerie. This is called the most haunted place in Ireland. So Irish people are probably rolling their eyes at everything I say right now because it probably sounds like a bad episode of Ghost Hunters, who did go there in one episode on YouTube apparently. But the Elemental, the idea is that the Druids had, they think maybe it's something that the Druids had created, and that w this one woman who owner of this place many, many hundreds of years later, she messed around with black magic, Mildred Darby. She was interested in the cult and did a lot of cult things. They think it kicked it. But what the Elemental is, have described the creature as about the size of a sheep, possessing a decaying face and dark, menacing eyes, often accompanied. And this was accounted by a young boy who actually walked in there when he's an old man now, but he was interviewed. It smells of sulfur and rotting flesh when it comes out, and it's meant to be some sort of guardian there, but it's like basically a demon. And anyone who's ever smelt it or had any experiences there, and this is a place that had a lot, but it gets weirder. That within this church, so it's called the Bloody Chapel, which is where the brothers killed each other. There is built to the side of it. It is called a. It's a word I'd never actually seen before. Oblate, which is a kind of a shaft that leads to a hidden dungeon.
Oubliette.
Oubliette. Okay. Yes. There you
Oubliette.
go.
Yeah.
Oubliette.
It's like an inescapable tomb.
Yeah. So they had that to dispose of the bodies that were being held at, in the prison of this place. And years later, they discovered the remains of about 120 different bodies that they dug up and took out. So if any place is going to have enough things to be haunted, and then there's also this other entity called the Red Lady, which sounds a lot more mainstream, but it was this elemental, this idea of sounds much more like a demon that people are seeing and reporting over the last couple hundred years about this thing that they believe had something to do with the Druids. And look it up, because it cre I was like, oh, this is like a genuinely, it's not just spooky like the other ghost stories. And it reminded me a bit more of Hokum in that sense, that there is a something even darker below, not just a ghost story, but some other kind of entity. And anyway, I'd never heard of that, and I wish I had, because I would have visited. I don't know if I would have gone into the Bloody Chapel, but I would have definitely gone to this castle.
Would have.
And maybe, I don't know. When I lived in Savannah, we had some stories there that
You guys had a
because
lot of ghost stories in
Savannah had
Savannah.
the, I think I've talked about it before, but Savannah had this one house, the doctor's house, which is one of the main ones that I remember was for sale when I was there. And it's like, it was a big tourist attraction for a long time. And my friend who lived across the street broke in at one point, and, you know, they tried to sleep, spend the night and stuff. But it was famous because during yellow fever, they didn't have enough places to put bodies. So at some point they just started building a pit in the back of the house and dumping hundreds and hundreds, because they just had to, couldn't deal with all the bodies of people dying from yellow fever. So that's the kind of shit that usually, to me, if there is psychic residue or whatever we want to call it, I always feel like that's number one, is like weird burial stuff, weird pain, surprising deaths that have happened. Anyway, so this is Leap Castle. I'm very interested to know more. If anyone is from Ireland and knows more about the elemental, hit me up, because there should be a movie on this. Where's the
And
elemental
see,
movie?
and here's why we're the best podcast co-hosts is I'm incredibly skeptical and immediately go, oh yeah, I'm sure there's totally like whales or crying or whatever. So yeah, I tend to be very skeptical on ghosts just because I've never had that crazy experience. But
You don't turn street lamps on.
I don't. And
That's
I've
the big
never
one.
had the one defining, like I feel like so many people have the one defining thing of like there was this one time that I was in an attic and then this crazy shit happened. I've never had that. I've never had the
No.
thing where I can't be like, oh, well, that fell off the counter because of wind or
I
earthquake
don't
or
think I've
whatever it
had that
was.
either. But I've heard a couple stories where from people who I'm like, who are skeptics, that that's always the thing. That's why I hope it something happens to you, because that's the best person.
Thanks. I hope you get
Well,
attacked by ghosts.
it is really funny though that we are scared of ghosts, because it's literally the most optimistic possible thing that could happen.
I know,
Like,
right?
literally,
You
if we
get to
fast
hang
saw a
around.
ghost, it's like, oh, there's an afterlife. Like,
Oh,
literally,
shit.
but none of us see it that way. We see it as this creepy thing. It's probably because you don't often hear about the positive. It's usually some remnant
It's
of something
anger
negative.
ghosts,
Yeah,
yeah.
saying that didn't move on, if we believe in that. Anyway, I found this very interesting, and I would like to know more about it. So
Well, you
the
had
elemental.
me at Druids. What was your
Yeah.
phrase? Druid Shenanigans. You
Druid
had me at
Shenanigans,
Druid Shenanigans.
which is
So,
also the name of my next album. Druid
Druid
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans. Well, mine, it just echoes to this because mine is all about the skepticism
Oh,
and
good.
the truth behind it. So, this just kind of hark like exactly what we were talking
Yeah.
about. So, I am reading this really good book that I got an early copy of called Don't Go There. And it's by J.W. Ocker. It's coming in July from Quirk Books. And don't go there. What it's about is all of these haunted places around the world. So it's all different, like the suicide forest in Japan, and it goes to all these different places. And it talks about the ghost story behind it, and then it talks about the reality of it, which is where I get really, really interested. Like, what part of this is truth versus what part of this is the hokum behind it, the mythology behind it. And so I've really been enjoying this book. So coming in July, y'all should definitely pick it up. It's a fun read. But the one that I wanted to talk about was the chapter on the Bermuda Triangle. Because when I was a kid, there were certain things that just were everywhere that I felt like prolific. It's like quicksand, you know, like quicksand was in all the movies and we were all scared to death of quicksand, which I to date have not seen quicksand. But the Bermuda Triangle was something else that for kids in the 80s, it was just everywhere. It was just like, how are we not solving this Bermuda Triangle thing? Like, this seems to be such a huge thing. And it was just everywhere. And how are we not solving it? Like, why are people still driving boats through it? Who the hell would go to Bermuda? Like, this, it was just such a crazy thing to think about as a kid. So the chapter on it is really fascinating because it basically talks about how that hype level grew up to the 1980s. And it is just really fascinating. So first, some media portrayals of the Bermuda Triangle. We've got the movie Mary, which I rather enjoyed, Death Ship Triangle, and one of the best X-Files episodes of all times. But I think that most of us kind of understand what the Bermuda Triangle is based on unsolved mystery shows. If you had those Time Life books,
I
Mysteries of
love
the
those
Unknown,
books. Yeah, Mysteries of the
I've
Unknown.
slowly been collecting them, the Mysteries of the Unknown. I grab them anytime I see one at a Goodwill. I have four of them now, so I'm slowly collecting them. But basically, what the book says, which I, immediately started Googling and is true, is the Bermuda Triangle was not really a thing at all until a news article came out from the Miami Herald in the 1950s, in 1950. And the article was entitled "Sea Puzzles Still Baffle Men in Push-Button Age." And what this article did is it highlighted this area off the coast of like Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, over into the Atlantic, that a bunch of planes, not a bunch, like three planes had gone missing in the 1940s in this area. And the article was not like, there are three planes that have gone missing. Something mysterious is happening. It was like, isn't it wild that in an age of push button and science, and we're venturing into the 1950s and we've got all these crazy technologies, we still are missing planes. Weather still trumps all. And it definitely kind of posited it more as like, no matter how much technology we make, weather can still take down a fucking plane and will. But people read this article, and everybody kind of centered on one element of the article, which is what became the most famous thing about the Bermuda Triangle. And so it was like the linchpin that set the whole thing in motion, which is known as Flight 19 from 1945. And what this particular flight was, December 5th, 1945, five different Navy torpedo planes depart from Fort Lauderdale, and they're planning on doing a few hours training mission. And they never come back. They're never seen from again. And so they ended up sending out lots of search missions, but they never found them. And it became this question of, well, how do five planes flying in tandem just all disappear? And the Navy even released an official statement saying that they think that their compasses were malfunctioning. And instead of driving back to Fort Lauderdale, they just drove straight out into the Atlantic Ocean and ran out of gas and crashed. And then we never found them. But the simple fact that they never found them began this fervor. And that article drawing attention to these couple of incidents really kind of set the whole thing in motion. So even though it was not his intention, throughout the 1950s and 60s, dozens of books on the mysterious Bermuda Triangle start getting written. By the time that the 1970s rolled around, those weird documentaries were in full swing. 1971, The Devil's Triangle is released, and it is hosted by Vincent Price. And this is considered to be like one of the really big, good, high budget ones of those mockum of those like weird documentaries that were coming out. And so the Devil's Triangle documentary really just cemented everything. And so by the time the 1980s rolls around, 70s and 80s, it is just everywhere. It is just this prolific legend that we're all hearing about, the Bermuda Triangle. And then it dies down a lot. Like, my kids are aware of it, but not to the degree that I was during the 1980s, where I couldn't understand how anybody would go there because it's just haunted, and like six ships are just sinking constantly and planes getting sucked out of the air constantly. It's not that. It's not actually even the most dangerous place to travel by any stretch. There's just a lot of bad weather. And that's kind of
Isn't there
how
some sort of magnetic issue as well
I
there?
don't
And
know. I
maybe it
didn't
messes with the
read about
compasses and
that. It
stuff. I
may
don't know.
mess with the compasses. I did read that about a number of different places on the map, that there's a couple of different places around the globe where it can, just because of where it's located, mess with compass readings. And that's what they think happened to those five planes from 1945. But as far as like most dangerous places to sail or fly a plane, Drake's Passage, which is the little tiny area of water between the tip of South America and Antarctica, where basically like an entire ocean has to suck down and go through this tiny little stretch and then come back out the other side, that's by far listed as like one of the absolute most dangerous places to travel. But yeah, so that is kind of my debunking of the Bermuda Triangle. That said, it's still really fun to look back and look at all of the different flights that went down during the 1940s and what could have been going on.
I still think it's Nessie.
It's Nessie. Wait,
Nessie has
Nessie's
something to do
in the
with Bermuda.
Bermuda Triangle
Well, he
now?
has telekinetic energy. So he's in the Loch Ness, but
I thought he
I
was
don't
in
know.
cahoots with the aliens who were just sucking the planes out of the sky. Nope,
There's some
nope,
stuff we'll never know.
nope.
You can't
Okay.
disprove my Nessie theory either. That's the great thing
I
about the
can't.
unknown.
That's
It's
true.
as
It is
likely as
true.
anything.
It is.
I don't
You're a
know.
lizard person, aren't you? I knew it.
I'm not, but I'm starting to like the alien stuff, the way everyone's talking about it these days. I'm like, wait, are we just accepting now that there's aliens? Like,
I
when
think
did this
we
worm
are,
turn?
but I don't know if they're with us yet. I think we're accepting that there is something,
My
but
new
yeah.
theory is Spielberg's movie, like at the moment that they reveal themselves in his new movie, is going to be what happened in real life, and that this has all been timed to like entertain and warn us all at the one moment. So let's
All at the
see.
same time.
Hold on to your asses. We'll see what happens this summer.
This
Go watch
sounds
the
like an
Spielberg film.
obsession.
It could be. Oh yes, obsession.
Did
Okay.
you catch that? Did you
Yeah, I
catch
did. That was
that?
good. Usually, I have to do
Thank you.
that. This is great. We could stay on time today. Look at this. We're moving.
Tonight's episode of Colors of the Dark is sponsored by Ballantine Books and their new book, There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division. They're all around us, hiding in plain sight. One could be in the room with you now, just to your left. I'm talking about the anti-memes, the mysterious antagonist from the sci-fi novel There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division by Quantum. That's mispronounced, sorry, Quantum. The mysterious antagonist from the sci-fi novel There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division by Quantum. Anti-memes are malevolent ideas that attack memory, identity, and reality itself. You could be seeing one right now, but from this second to the next, you'll forget that you did. Anti-memes can feed on your most cherished memories, the things that make you you, and you'll never know that anything changed. They are the perfect predators, and they aren't just feeding on us. They're invading. But how do you fight an enemy when you can never even know that you're at war? There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division is a wickedly brain-bending novel for fans of Jeff Vandermeer, Ted Chiang, and Blake Crouch. There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division by Quantum, available everywhere books are sold. And I will say, this is one of my favorite novels that I have read so far this year. Absolutely, Colors of the Dark endorsed.
This can be a fun, fasty kind of draft. It doesn't have to be super long. But yeah, we thought rather than just talking about this movie, which I haven't seen yet, but it's my other most anticipated of the year outside of Hokum, Obsession. Funnily enough, I just found out one of my students is the producer of it, and I had coffee with her a couple of
Wait,
days ago.
whom?
Haley Johnson, it's her very first movie, and I was blown away. She was a graduate of our school, and so we just had coffee, and I was just like, "How on earth did you go from your first thing and do this?" But she's doing great, and it's going to lead to many cool things. So that made me even more excited. But I also just don't want to watch this one at home on a link. I want to see it in a theater, like opening night with lots of people, because I have a feeling it's going to be a banger. So shout out to Haley. So this film on the poster, on one of the posters, it says Obsession, and then under it has a definition, which I always like it when they do that. A relentless attachment to an idea, feeling, or emotion, often paired with mental strain and physical unease. I thought that was a good precursor. So I thought instead of just talking about the movie, which we haven't seen yet, we would just do a quick 10 film obsession. We can open interpretation however we want. We'll do a draft like we did last week because it was fun, and have a little quick game, and maybe we'll introduce some people to a couple titles. I feel like that is a fun way to do it. We'll do it the same way we did last time, which is no substitutes unless we feel like we fucked something up, and you cannot block any choices of the other person.
And oh my God, I just realized I had Haley Johnson as well. She took, I
She's
think
great.
she was in my horror class. So that's,
Amazing work ethic.
yeah.
But I'm excited for it because, like, obviously that's a big deal when your first thing out of the gate is being called one of the best horror films in years. You go, okay, so
Okay.
yes,
So
we'll see that by the next show, I bet.
we are starting at 10 and
Yeah, who
moving
wants the
forward,
place? Who wants the
correct?
place? Yeah, who wants the place one at 10? We've got plenty of options here.
I always like doing the deep cuts more than the definitive one.
Always gets hard, yeah.
Yeah, that's when I'm always like, oh God, the pressure. So I always like doing
You do
the
10.
more deep
Pick a
cuts.
number
Okay,
10.
so I'm going 10, and I am gonna go with The Loved Ones from 2009.
Oh, yeah.
This is an amazing, amazing film from Sean Brin. who, did the Amazing Shark movie last year, has done a bunch of other stuff that I love. That one about the devil's music, I can't remember the
Devil's
name.
Candy, yeah,
Thank you,
Heavy Metal,
Devil's
yeah.
Candy. Yeah. But this is the one that kind of put him on the map, and it is about Lola. And specifically, it's about a teenage boy who is getting ready for prom, and there is this girl in his school that is in love with him, and he basically just kind of writes her off because he's got this girlfriend and he loves his girlfriend a lot. But he ends up being kidnapped by Lola and forced to have a prom with her at her house. And it is so fucked up and fantastic and fun and colorful and just absolutely fucked up all at the same time. So 2009, The Loved Ones.
And another great example of like a tone that is very hard to pull off.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
it's not a normal tone. It's like somewhere between comedy and kind of tortury movies, and
It is.
it's very good.
Yeah, it's very much a torture film, but it's still funny. Like, it is a near impossible tone. This is one that I remember got held for a really long time. Like, it was made in like 2007 and didn't get a release till 2009 because nobody could really figure out the marketing for it. And so it was one that I remember seeing on like bootleg that somebody had
Yeah,
like
I had to get the
brought over
Australian
from
one.
Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it took so long to come out here.
It's a great movie. Okay, I'm going to go my left field one here that isn't even normally in the horror category, but it's such a good example of how this word can be applied to something else. And that is from 1995, the first feature by Todd Haynes, Safe, starring Julianne
Ooh.
Moore. This is about a stay-at-home suburban housewife played by Julianne Moore. She's married to Xander Berkeley, and she's got a good life and has lots of, they have money and they have parties and all this. And really early in the film, she starts to feel weird about things. And she basically becomes, and I think it's just a great example of how an obsession film can be about a different angle than just romantic, even though most of them on this list will be that. She starts believing that she is suffering from all the toxins in the world, whether it's car exhaust or modern vacuum, things that you, cleaning products, she believes they're all making her sick. Now, whether she's right or not is always in question, but the way it's filmed, it feels to me like Mad Men, every female storyline from Mad Men about the wives, so not the men were who are all and Peggy who are all at work, but all the people who weren't at work, feels like they took a lot from this movie stylistically, and this idea of being alone all the time, having too much time on your hands, mentally like finding problems where there might not have been one. And then she starts to come up with this whole allergy to modernity, almost basically her obsession, and she ends up seeking to find a way through it. And it's one of my favorite performances. The style of the movie is the reason to watch it. It's just got this, just the way he shoots it, and it's her alone a lot of it. I actually rewatched this before making Dead Thing because it's so good at showing a person alone, and that's hard to do to keep it interesting, So it's a really interesting movie, and Julianne Moore is just phenomenal in this movie. This is like the first time I noticed her back in the day. It definitely has roots, and I don't know if this movie's going to come up or not, but I feel like a movie like Bug is taking
I
similar,
love Bug.
yeah, Bug is like the more horror version, a little more extreme, but taking, that's more about the paranoia of a specific kind of shared paranoia. But this one I think is a better example of like obsession about something so abstract that it's invisible. I mean, that's what the movie's about. She is thinking this invisible stuff around us is going to get her, basically. And so it's kind of an interesting example of a movie for this. So that's Safe.
You know what? I'm gonna hold on. What was my number eight? I'm gonna put that on a runner-up list that we'll have to
Okay.
talk about. Sorry,
Totally.
I'm rearranging
You never know
as
what's going to
we
come up as we
go.
go, because anything
Yeah.
could come up.
Okay, so I am gonna do, this is a deep cut, but I deeply love this film, even though it's got kind of mixed reviews. This is The Caller from 2011. I know damn well you have not seen this
The
movie.
caller.
The
Let me look it up.
Caller. This is from 2011. It's a British film about this woman who is just getting a divorce. She's kind of trying to keep a low profile from her abusive husband. And she moves into this apartment that has a rotary phone. And she starts getting calls on it from this woman named Rose, who is claiming to be in 1979 and is looking for her boyfriend, Bobby. And the woman is kind of like thinks that she's just talking to a crazy old lady and is kind of like, oh, honey, it's not 1979, just treating her like she has a level of Alzheimer's. But Rose keeps calling back and calling back. And what she starts to realize is that Rose is actually calling from 1979, and it is the woman who used to live in her apartment in 1979. Now, by that logic, this woman who is calling her is still alive. And so it gets into this incredible web of this woman. Basically, she has a stalker from 1979 who's now obsessed with her, who is calling, the 1979 version is calling her. And as it goes through, it starts to unravel how they're now connected, and she starts using her apartment kind of like a way to discover things about this woman, like peeling back wallpaper and knocking down walls. She begins to find out things about this woman who's now repeatedly calling her and becoming obsessed with her. It's a really cool take on a stalker film because it is two women, but one of them in a different time period who may potentially still be alive today. So this was one that when I saw it, I was shocked because it did not get that great of reviews. It definitely, was one that we covered at Fangoria, but it just kind of fell out. I don't even remember the reviews being bad. I just remember it falling off the face of the earth pretty quickly. But I always thought it was really smart and really sharp and just a really cool stalker film with a bend. So The
Well,
Call of
I
2011.
definitely don't know that one, but it made me instantly look it up, and we'll have to give a shout out for a double feature with the movie I know we both like from 1987 called The Caller, where Malcolm McDowell goes to that
Oh,
house,
yeah.
and it's got twist after twist after twist. So that's two films called The Caller, and that's not the only time that's going to happen today. Okay, so great. I will have to check that one out. I will have to put down a film right now. I'm going to give a big spoiler as soon as I say the title of why this is the ultimate one of the ultimate obsession movies. A movie called High Tension.
Oh,
A
yeah.
movie that dares to ask, spoiler, so stop listening if you don't know High Tension. A movie that dares to ask, do you love someone enough to become an obese French man and then stalk and kill them and kill everyone they love? Because if you do, that's a mighty big twist. So that is High Tension, one of the craziest, it actually reignited my love of horror. It's like the single movie that I really don't think I'd be doing this if I hadn't seen this in 2003 on the big screen. I think I was veering away because I was just kind of bored of what the post-Scream stuff was becoming. And I saw this in a theater and I was like electrified by the style of it. I was like, oh, standing up clapping basically because it was so intense. But yes, famously it has a kind of a bonkers ending, but the bonkers ending is so baked into the obsession angle that if you could love someone like this girl loves her friend so much and is so obsessed by her that she changes the entire narrative thread of a movie of what we're watching, and by the end you're like you might not like the twist, but man, it's certainly fun and stylish. So High Tension has to get on the air because it is a really original weird movie.
Okay, for my number six, I'm bringing on one from 10, 20 years ago that I feel like people have forgotten about. And it's one that got really mixed reviews when it came out, based off a legendary book. But I always really liked this one. And this is Perfume, The Story of a
Okay.
Murderer.
I mean, the book is one of the best I've ever read.
It's
I
amazing.
liked the movie because it is very well styled by Tom Twyker, I believe. But man, the book is like, because it's hard to smell, you know. You can read about smell, but watching it's kind of hard, yeah. But that's an interesting one, yeah.
It's a Patrick Susskind book,
Yeah.
and this it became legendary for kids in the late 90s because supposedly this was like one that Kurt Cobain had was obsessed with and read
Oh.
over and over and had
Yeah.
read right before his suicide. And so it was one that had definitely kind of become part of the I'm a cool alternative chick zeitgeist in the grunge culture of the late 90s. So that's where I first heard about the book. The movie comes out in 2006 and did not get the best reviews. That said, looking at it now, I mean, like, it doesn't look like it's, I mean, it's got like a
It, it's
3.7 on
it's
Letterboxd.
very well
So,
made. Like it's a
yeah.
really classically made.
It
It's just a hard thing to get across. But for
is.
Obsession, it's great.
And
You're
I
right
will
for that.
say, it's a really high production value movie. It feels because this is 2006 when it's coming out, it feels very Baz Luhrmann. Like I, in my brain, this is like just a couple of years after Moulin Rouge, and it's like that level of fast cutting and production value and color. But it's about a man who is a super smeller, and to the degree that he decides to create the most perfect scent ever made, and he believes that the way to do this is by essentially synthesizing in much the same way that you would extract oils from a flower or from lavender or from anything like that, extracting oils from the most beautiful smelling young maidens in his time. This is in 18th century France. So he's finding these absolutely beautiful young women who have these scents. And because he's a super smeller, it's all about combining them together. And so he becomes a serial killer, extracting scents from his victim's skin after they die, and then using it to create this absolutely perfect perfume. And the ending of it is fucking amazing. But the whole point of it is this story of this man becoming a serial killer because he has this like super sense that makes him feel separate from the rest of society, that makes him feel ostracized, that make him feel like he is something completely separate, even though he has this power that they don't have. And so he gets trained as a perfumer by Dustin Hoffman, who's great in it. And it's just a wild, really weird, weird movie. But yeah, he becomes a serial killer. I think there's 12. He's trying to collect 12 different scents. He has like this math of figuring out how the 12 different notes need to match to create this perfect perfume. So it's about a perfume maker in the middle of a serial killer outbreak in 18th century France. So really fun. Perfume.
This is also the full title is actually "Perfume: The Story of a Murderer." I'd forgotten, but I had forgotten that the guy is played by Ben Whishaw, and Ben Whishaw is most famous in the last 10 years for being is it Q in the Bond film?
Yes.
But it's just weird because he's like the nerdy guy in those, but in this he's the scary guy. Very interesting. Yeah, that's a good one. I hadn't thought about that, and I like that it's about also not an obsession with woman, but an obsession
Yes.
with a fragrance. Okay, so for the next one, I think was one of the best movies ever. It's definitely the most ending that most got me back in the days when I saw it, and that is the original version from 1988 of The Vanishing.
Ooh.
And the reason I like this is it's not the obsession of the killer, because I don't think the killer in this is obsessed. I think he's a very rational, almost boring person. He has decided to take a life based on the flip of a coin almost, and thinking about odds and thinking about what will it mean, how it will change his life. So he's not the obsessed one, but basically it's a guy and a girl on holiday, young in love, and I think it's a Netherlands film, and they stop at a gas station, and she just never comes back out, and he's just waiting. He's like, what the fuck? And then she never comes out. And then a few years later, his life is, really been heavily affected by all this. He's obsessed by trying to understand, but there's no information, so there's nothing to do. So he's kind of started to move on. And then he starts receiving postcards from the person who abducted her, who promises he will reveal the truth of what happened if he doesn't ask any questions and just does everything the guy says. And basically, you get to see a different side of obsession, which is the blindness that obsession creates. When you are obsessed by something, you are not seeing the whole picture, and by not seeing the whole picture in this case because of a tragedy, you are in deep trouble. And it has one of the most just utterly brilliant and harrowing endings. I don't mind the remake. 5 years later, the director remade it with Kiefer Sutherland and Sandra Bullock and Jeff Bridges playing the killer. I think Jeff Bridges is excellent in it. It's just a little softer, because the other ones, just there's something about the quality of the ending of the other one that's so goes so hard. Spurlose is the original title, but I just love a different angle on being when you are obsessed. This kind of idea of being blinded, I think, is very strong in this movie. So, and if you haven't seen it, it is such a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
The Vanishing.
Okay. Number four, this is a recent one. I am including Red Rooms from 2023. Again,
Oh, that's
I,
good.
for the most part, was targeting ones that where it's not an obsession with a lover. I kind of was like, let's get weirder with that.
Yeah, no, like
So,
whatever. I think it's good to be all over the place.
Red Rooms is about an obsession with a serial killer. It is a woman who we see her basically always going through her normal life. She's going to work, she's going to chat rooms. She is also attending the trial of a serial killer. And she's attending it with another woman who is absolutely obsessed with this person, but she believes that he is completely innocent. And we're kind of not really understanding why she's obsessed with this. We just know that she is part of these online Reddit forums, all about him, all about the killing. She's constantly researching it. She's bidding on some type of footage that is supposed to be this like unseen footage of one of the killings. And she's going to these court cases every day about his crimes where he's being up for trial. And it just escalates and escalates. This was a movie that I was so not enraged by, I was frustrated with for the first two thirds, thinking that it was just going to abruptly end and it wasn't going to go anywhere. It was just going to be about a girl obsessed with a serial killer, and we spent most of the movie watching her on Reddit threads. And then the ending made it all worthwhile. Like this, the way that it goes for the last 20 minutes, I was suddenly like, fuck, okay, this got wild. So,
Well, it's
and I
going to
know you
linger.
really liked this
Well, it was
one.
my favorite of that year, and then probably one of my favorites of the decade because it does something that's so hard to do, which is for those first two thirds that you're frustrated, it's doing it not on purpose, but it's doing it in a way where you have no idea what she's doing. Like, you don't know. Like, I spent most of it going, oh, she's probably like a victim who survived and is waiting to kill him at the end. And so, because I'm going one direction and then the other direction starts coming, and then you're like, she just sick and twisted, or is she as bad as him? Like, it has this great, ambiguous, bizarre ending. It lingers because it's a great addition to this. Actually, I hadn't included it, probably just maybe because it was new in my brain. But yeah, I think it definitely should be on here because it's fantastic. Okay, get ready for my cheat. This is my only cheat because you just did something similar accidentally. My cheat is because it would be awful to have two films with the same title on here. So I am going to be putting on The Fan from 1981
Oh, I had this little higher, but yes.
and Der Fan.
Der Fan.
So I'm going to do both though, to begin, because they're both really great movies. Yeah, and Der Fan could even be at the very top. But The Fan, I feel like a lot of people still haven't seen this. It's fucking great. So I'm not talking about the
So
Tony
you're doing
Scott.
both
I'm
fans?
doing The Fans. So Der Fan and The Fan as a double at number three. We're going to do a double feature.
That's a cheat.
It's a cheat, but that's a creative cheat. They both use voiceover of letters a lot. So I figured there's a good reason. They actually have a lot of similarities. So in
They
The
do.
Fan, Michael Biehn, who's just freaking great in this, very young Michael Biehn, this is like 1981, it's a pre-Terminator, is a record salesman, obsessive fan of an actress played by Lauren Bacall, which is great, classy. And she keeps getting letters, and her person who usually defenders, like, some of these letters are getting a little sexual and a little graphic, and you'll always hear the letter being typed out by Michael Biehn's voice, and tells Lauren Bacall at some points, like, fires back at the guy, and Lauren Bacall gets very defensive, like, you shouldn't be like chastising my fans, like, let them be who they are. Of course, that's a mistake because he starts knocking off people in her life and becomes super obsessive. James Garner's in here too. It's a really good mixture of like an old-fashioned thriller, because it's Lauren Bacall and James Garner, and something very new that was going to be a big thing in the 80s, like a De Palma film. But I feel like it's still very slept on. Like, I don't feel like a lot of people talk about this movie, and it's very atmospheric, and Michael Biehn's phenomenal as The Fan. And then the other one, which we both love and have given a lot
Love.
of, it's definitely, needs to be. I would obviously put Der Fan above The Fan, but I just think it's too funny that they have the same title in different languages. So both use the same structure at the start, which is the letters. This is about a
To
17-year-old
writing
girl.
to the rock star in
In
this
her case,
case.
it's a pop star. She's hero worshiping, and she's obsessed to the point where she's created a relationship in her mind that there's already a connection there. She waits for months on end for mail that never comes, and still, the first half is just her, kind of like Red Rooms, where it's just her doing this stuff that we're like, what has this got to do with anything? And
Listening
then,
to his music, cutting pictures
yes.
out and posting on his wall, drawing pictures of him, and then writing these letters and checking the mailbox. It's like all about routine.
Yeah,
And
and the
then she
mailman
goes,
is getting some of the ire,
yeah.
even,
And
which is
then she
incredible.
goes to one of his concerts.
Yes, and they actually get to meet, and then, there's even some intimacy, and she and you're like, oh, this is great. Your
She's
obsessive
meeting
behavior is
her
going to pay off.
idol. You get to be with your idol.
But then, go back to what I said about high tension. If you love someone enough to turn into to a big Frenchman who's going to kill someone's family, it's even worse here. What she does to show her love, I maybe will leave it at that because it's about as like, I remember just watching it the
So
first time
brutal.
and kind of my jaw being like, whoa. Okay. So when people go there, this is like the movie that goes there. It goes all the way. It had to be German. Der Fan. Also, the music's really good and like a new wavy, and it's just a perfect obsession.
And
Kind
it's
of.
perfectly shot too. Like it's exactly, this film is one of those things where I'm like, every element is exactly what it needs to be. She is how she needs to look. The acting is exactly what it needs to be. It's just this beautiful little package of everything is exactly what it needs to be for this.
So that is
And
our at number three, The Fan and Der Fan. and it's a totally fine cheat that no one's gonna have a problem
It's
with.
total double feature that I feel like we need to do at some
Well,
point.
we also did the caller and the caller, so I think that's good.
I don't remember playing the second caller, but okay, the
Yeah,
caller and the
I
caller.
placed it. The
So
call and the caller.
that was at number eight. At number two, I am playing one of my all-time favorite films that I still end up citing constantly, Perfect Blue from
Oh yeah. One of my
1997.
favorites too. I love that
This,
you're putting this on here.
oh my God, this movie is just about every level of obsession. It is about a Japanese pop star, J-pop idol, who's in this group called CHAM. And she is just used to having these fans just absolutely obsessed with her. Everybody is obsessed with this group. She decides to leave the group to go off and try to be an actress. So she leaves CHAM to go form an acting career. And while she is trying to make this kind of life swap, many of her fans are kind of upset with her. But then she also starts getting these stalkery fans who are getting more aggressive. All while she finds this website that is about her that's supposed to be like these daily diary entries that it's like the stuff that she's doing in great detail, but she's not writing it. And so she realizes that there is this something is writing an entire diary life about her online, much in a CAM way, where some of it is just absolutely horrifying, the stuff that she's reading. And so she's trying to figure out who this person is that is making up this fictional stuff about her and how it's appearing online because they seem to know everything about what she's doing, all while she's now taken a job as a detective in a TV series that she's in. And it's all about her life spiraling while all of these different obsessive things are entering it because she's being stalked by a fan. There's murders taking place around her all at the same time. There's just a lot happening, but it is all about different levels of obsession.
It is the ultimate De Palma movie that's done as a Japanese anime.
Animation,
It
yeah,
also was a
it's.
big influence on like Black Swan,
Oh,
and
yeah.
which is also about obsession and things like that. So yes, great putting that one at number two. It deserves to be high. Okay, so here's I'll ask you the question. And you'll get to decide. Do I play the what I think is the number one obvious choice and should be number one forever that everyone will know, or should I play a wild card and we just talk about the number one being too obvious? How do you feel?
Okay, I'm going to say play the wild card because there is the number one that I feel like everybody would be like, oh,
Just
this
like
is the
Carrie. Carrie
ultimate
was the number one we
film.
did in 1960. There is only one number one. I watch it every year. I show it in class because it is a perfect movie. And R.I.P. Rob Reiner, Misery is the ultimate.
Is it
It's
like.
the ultimate obsession. So I don't even think that's as fun to talk. It's perfect. So I don't think we need to place it on our list. We're going to place it off to the side to say it is obviously number one. And
Yeah.
so I wasn't planning on this other one to be number one, but because for the sake of an interesting, unique list, and it shows how long we've been dealing with themes of obsession. And I know you like this one too. I'm going to play it 1935's Mad Love,
Hell
directed by
yes.
Carl Freund. This movie's fucking
This
crazy.
movie is bonkers
It
as
is.
shit for
It is Pete. Yeah.
1935.
You thought Peter Lorre's weird playing a child killer in M. It's like a couple years later, he's even more crazy. He is a demented surgeon called Dr. Gogol. He's completely obsessed with a British actress who is married to a very famous concert pianist. Now, her concert pianist husband suddenly has this crazy accent where his hands get all mangled. And so she comes begging to Dr. Gogol, knowing his obsession with her. And he says, oh, yes, of course, I will help you out. And he gives her husband the guillotined murderer's hands that were known for knife throwing. So suddenly attaches those hands, very body parts, obviously, onto this. And then later, when we see Peter Lorre, again, like body parts, I think there's a lot of body parts coming from Mad Love. Peter Lorre has, we realize he's done a whole lot of stuff to himself. It is crazy. Like for 1935, this is directed by the guy who made the original Mummy, Carl Freund. He was a cinematographer as well. And it's like a 75, 80 minute movie where you're like, this is crazier than all the Universal movies.
It
Like
is so fucking bonkers.
it is fantastic though. Like, and it's good to have an older movie on here at the top. It's kind of fun. Because I do think, again, this is kind of like, when you see those Val Ludens are singing, you're like, wow, where have you been all my life? That's how I felt when I first saw Mad Love. So kind of fun to get out on there, even though we all know that the true number one is Misery. It's a great list, though. Let's count down the list.
Okay, so at 10, we have The Loved Ones. At 9, we have Safe. At 8, we have The Caller and The Caller, both of them. At 6, we have Perfume. At 5, we have The
Oh, seven, high
Vanishing.
tension,
Oh,
seven, high
sorry,
tension.
sorry. 7, High Tension. 6, Perfume. 5, The Vanishing. 4, Red Rooms. 3, Durfan and The Fan.
Yeah.
At 2, we have Perfect Blue, and at 1, we have Mad Love with a clear predilection towards Misery,
Great. Who
which
could not?
technically is number 1, but we wanted to go wild. And I have to throw in a couple of others that I was kind of like, these were really good that deserve to be
Yeah.
somewhere. Excision. That's
Oh
the
yeah.
one from like 2012 about the girl who's obsessed with period blood. I
Yeah.
really kind of just
Very interesting movie,
loved
yeah.
how weird it was and all the places it went. I like that director a lot. I wish he would do more. I also wanted to mention Trouble Every Day. That is another, I
Interesting.
don't even know what she's obsessed with in that movie. There's a lot of going on.
Yeah, it's hard to tell, but it is. There's also, I mean, look, up there with Misery, not quite, because it's more of a perfect sociopath movie than it is obsession movie. Talented Mr. Ripley is incredible. Like, I watched it again recently, and when a 99, I watched it, I was like, oh, this is a good movie. Watching it now, it's like, oh, we don't make movies this good anymore. This is the other version of Purple Noon, Tom Ripley story. But his obsession isn't just with Jude Law, Matt Damon's character. It's not just obsessed with that person. It's become his obsession with becoming somebody. His obsession to not be a quiet nobody, but to be someone important is frightening. It's a really incredible film. There's also like the Blumhouse, early Blumhouse film, The Gift, that I think is
Oh, it's
phenomenal.
great.
I think it's one of their best movies, and that was Joel Edgerton directed. And then the reason I'll pair that is another one that still kind of slipped on, that had Rebecca Hall as the wife. And then a few years afterwards, there was a movie I loved called Resurrection, that no one's really many people seem to have seen, but she is a woman who has survived an abusive relationship when we meet her. We don't know what that relationship is. And she lives by complete order. Like, everything has to be exactly right, exactly ordered. It's almost like she's just expecting something to turn, so she has to be able to get out of there. She has a young daughter that she struggles with for that reason. And she's constructed this perfect life for herself in that sense. And then she goes to a conference, looks across the room, and Tim Roth's just sitting there, and she has a panic attack, and we realize that's the ex-husband. He enters her life. And it's one of the scariest characters I've ever seen in a movie, because it's fucking weird. Like, the rest of the movie is so straight, the way it's shot. And then he comes up to her, and I think he says something like, oh, remember that baby we almost had? Yeah, I ate it. It's in my
Oh
belly.
gosh,
And you're watching this
when
going,
did you see
what?
this?
It's really fucking crazy. It's a scary performance. Tim Roth's incredible. So that would make a pretty good double, The Gift and Resurrection. Like, Rebecca Hall and deep shit movies would be pretty fun. But yeah, that's the one that I just don't think people really still think remember it, even though it's recent.
The one that I wanted to mention that I debated putting it at like the number 10 spot, but it's very polarizing and it got terrible reviews when it first came out. Joel Schumacher's The Number 23. And you'll
Right.
remember I rewatched this about a year ago on our Patreon show because I do a segment on the Patreon show called Is It Still Bad? Where I watch films that were like made like 20 years ago that were completely destroyed critically to see if there is any redeeming qualities for them 20 years later. And I really liked this on the rewatch. It is Jim Carrey, which I feel like was a lot of the flack is people at this time. Nobody really wanted Jim Carrey doing like super, super scary stuff. This was like fresh off of comedy Jim Carrey. So seeing him shift to this, I feel like was hard. Like him going to Truman Show, he was still kind of comedic in that to a degree. But him going to this, where it's like dark, dark, it was most of the critical reviews were like Jim Carrey's not a serious actor. He can't do horror. And I gotta say, watching this again, I was pretty into it. I did not like the way that it shot because it shot in that like gray, washed out sepia tone that everybody was using at this time period in like 20, when was this? Like 26, 2007, 2007. But the plot is that he gets a book for his birthday. And it is about a detective. And in it, it is about a detective who is obsessed with the number 23. So he is reading a book called The Number 23 about a detective named Detective Fingerling who is obsessed with the number 23 and believes that the number 23 has reoccurred over and over throughout history and time. And it's got all this importance. And the more that he unpacks about the number 23, the more that people around him are dying in these really kind of complicated ways that all date back to the number 23. And it's this enigma and there's more to it because he's meeting other people who are obsessed with the number 23. So as he is reading this story, he he's picturing himself in the role of Detective Fingerling. So we're seeing him in this version of himself, obsessed with the number 23, but he is buying into the enigma and the conspiracy theory. So he himself, as he is reading it, is also becoming obsessed with the number 23. And then the two realities start to shift because he, at one point, meets a character out of the book. And it starts getting real trippy from there. Like you can't tell which way is up, and it gets into kind of a lot of repressed memories and where that theory comes from. But the enigma in it is really captivating, and I love a good "I don't know what the fuck is going on" movie, and this is definitely it, where it is kind of oniony layers. It's
Yeah, I don't think I saw it.
like a tiramisu with the layers, and each layer gets you a little bit deeper. So yeah,
I saw clips of it, but I back in the day, and I don't think I ever watched it.
I did not like this when
Yeah.
it came out. I found it to be confusing. On the rewatch, really liked it. So I know there's probably half of our listeners right now eye-rolling it because they saw it back in 2007 and were like, "Oh, it was terrible." Rewatch, it might not be as bad as you remember. The number 23.
And one I left on my list, but that would have been in my top two. It's almost as good as, in my opinion, it's almost as good as Misery, but it's too obvious because it's so close to the movie that's coming out, Obsession. But that is the classic Fatal Attraction.
Oh, yeah.
I watched it again not long ago for class, and I was blown away. Like, stylistically, it's so well made. But Glenn Close saying, "I will not be ignored," is just like, it's so frightening the way how she portrays that character and how it all just unravels their lives. It's a really good, it's the best version of the erotic thriller like that exists. It's kind of a perfect movie, but a little too close to the Obsession that's about to come out, I suspect. But I'm excited to see it, and so hopefully
Yes.
this is a fun primer for people before seeing the new movie in
Yes.
theaters. So let's close out with our horror wreck
Okay.
of the week.
I have two, and they are both books and quick. So the first
Okay.
one, I had gone back in time and read Nate Cassidy's debut novel. And we've read a bunch of Nate
The
Cassidy,
Wolf one
like,
recently, right?
yeah, The
Yeah,
Wolf,
Evan's
When
Wolf.
the Wolf Comes Home. Yeah, we're both like big Nate Cassidy fans, and I've read a bunch of his other stuff, but somebody, I was at some point Googling perimenopause horror, and this was one of the very first ones that popped up, Mary, An Awakening of Terror. And this was his debut novel back in 2022. This is great. I had a blast with this. It is about Mary, who is a woman of a certain age who is pretty much unremarkable. Like she has really, she works at a bookstore. She's really quiet. She works in the basement, kind of repairing the books and filing them. She likes working alone. She lives by herself. Nobody really pays attention to her. But as changes start to happen with her body, she starts hearing voices and they're telling her to do stuff. And it's going along with like the hot flashes and everything else that you go through. But she's also then starting to get visions. And so she's basically going through the change, but realizes that there's something way bigger happening to her. And this, it gets wild. I had a really good time with this. We do not see a lot of kind of menopausal horror, and this was a treat. The second one, you will love, just because it's so different yet smart. And I know you love Japanese horror stories. And this
Dela.
is called Strange Houses. I'm
Oh, I no, I
surprised.
read this one. Yeah,
Oh, you did? Okay. I
wait,
had not.
is it strange how it's? I've read one of the ones by this writer.
There's
This,
Strange Houses, Strange Pictures, and Strange Buildings.
okay. I read Strange Pictures, I believe. Yes,
Okay.
Strange Pictures, because each one they put together, you meet all these disparate characters, and each chapter you put together a piece of the puzzle that puts together the movie, the book by the end, and
This
each one has a
is,
weird drawn picture. Yeah,
yeah, this is a little bit different in
I
how it's
love.
structured, but it's still got that visual element, and the reader is having to do a good amount of the lift on their own. This one is about a woman who supposedly is posting, she is obsessed with kind of house layouts. And so she has a YouTube channel where she talks about house layouts and floor plans and stuff like that. One day, one of her friends contacts her and is like, "Hey, I'm about to move in. I want to put an offer down on this house we saw, but check out this layout. It's really weird." And she starts looking at it and she's like, "Yeah, this is really weird." And it's just like a weird layout, very off-putting for some reason. And then she shares it with one of her friends who's an architectural expert, who immediately starts saying, like, yeah, this is weird. And what they start identifying is there's all this dead space throughout the house. Like, there's all these places where nothing exists. And then they start realizing that there's other houses like this around Tokyo. They find others that are kind of built the same way and trying to connect, like, who is the architecture doing this? And then they start connecting them through people. And why are they doing this? And what is it? Like, they immediately are kind of jumping to like murder mystery of like, well, that dead space is clearly where you hide the bodies, and where it evolves from there. But the cool thing about this book, it is a murder mystery, and you're kind of solving this murder through, or more of kind of the mystery of what these places are. You're solving it through these floor plans, and looking at floor plans, but the floor plans evolve with you. So you'll be looking at it for 20 pages, and all of a sudden, this little thing that you didn't even notice on the first page suddenly becomes really apparent, because they call it to attention. And then, kind of just looking at it, like you'll suddenly realize that this room has no windows. And it just gets wilder and wilder as it goes. And they're showing the floor plans in the book. So you're looking at them as they're describing it. And the whole book is basically laid out as a conversation between her, the YouTuber, and the guy who is an architectural expert. And then she's interviewing people as she goes through, trying to figure out how these houses are being designed and for what purpose. This was really cool. So I know that it's a trilogy now.
Yeah, no, I remember reading as soon as I finished, I looked up the writer and there was like no pictures of him.
Yeah, it's like a myst it's like a mysterious YouTuber who doesn't post
Yeah,
pictures of
bizarre,
himself.
but they're like bestsellers.
Goes by the name Yuketsu.
Yeah, interesting. Closing us out. Okay, so perfect time to talk about one of my favorite writers is a writer called Ian McEwan. I read almost all his books back up until maybe the last few years. Like he was the main person I always read, and they're usually like darker fiction, not horror, but like dark. But he wrote a book. Speaking, it's the best book I've ever read about obsession, and it was a movie with Daniel Craig that was nowhere near as good. So read the book. So I'm talking about the book. It's called Enduring Love, and it opens basically with a science writer, a very practical man, and his wife there at in a beautiful kind of setting, and then there's this freak hot air balloon accident happening around them, and him and some other strangers are suddenly called into action, and all the stuff's going down, and they have to make a choice between the life of, in the moment by saving this man or saving this baby. They save this baby and a man dies. And this other man, more of a drifter type character, who is who's helping him, forms kind of an attachment to him because now they've just witnessed a death. And basically, this man becomes obsessed with him and his life and starts. Everything he does starts to entangle with him. And so it's got this existential angle about like, oh, we saved this person, but now we're kind of somehow connected, even though we're strangers, but now the stranger basically infiltrates his life. And it's in the movie, I didn't like the guy play. It's Reese Ifans. He's a good actor, but with Daniel Craig, it just didn't quite work the way the book does. And the book really gets under your skin. And it's a very disturbing, brilliantly written book, like one of the best I've ever read. Highly recommend it. Enduring Love, perfect for our obsession party here. So that's our
Yay!
pre-obsession work.
That is our obsession episode. Thank you all so much for joining us tonight. Please go see Obsession in the
Yeah, I'm
theater
looking forward
this
to it.
week. Yeah, I'm excited for it. Anyways, you can check us out over at our Patreon show Deep Cuts for lots more wild, weird episodes. I have one I've got to go watch tonight that I'm pretty excited about. And we'll be there next week. And then you can join us again in 2 weeks for another Colors of the Dark. Thank you all so much for listening. Have a great night.